Welcome to episode 29 of the Just Keep Spinning podcast. My name is Andrea and I'm here with...
I'm Andrew.
Andrew, and we actually have a special guest today. We have DJ My God Complex, otherwise known as Ken. Say hi, Ken.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, what's up? So we're over here, actually, we're recording at Grand Avenue Records. They opened their doors to us and let us record inside here. So thank you very much to them. And just really quick, I'm going to get into a few events I want to highlight. The first event is, once again, the Crate Creepers will be playing at Palabras Bookstore. And it's going to be an art show. So they have Hosh Gallery. So it's going to be exhibiting art. And then there's going to be Mario with his wonderful... what is it, Andrew? The thing that we love that he makes?
He is the Navajo taco guy.
Yeah, he makes Navajo tacos and burgers. The burger, their tacos are really good, but the burgers,
I
man.
I haven't had a burger.
He doesn't use a bun, does he?
He's the pie bread.
Yeah, he's the fry bread.
Oh, man, that sounds amazing.
I've been thinking about that one burger that I had for like a month since.
It's a huge burger.
Yeah, it's huge. Nice. So there's going to be that, and that's from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., and that's January 4th. God, it just feels so weird saying that, January 4th. Okay, and then the next event I wanted to highlight is actually... at all the way on the far west side. So we always cry that the west side gets no attention and love, but Zia is actually going to do a pop-up record shop at Ground Control, and it's from on January 12th from 12 p.m. to 10 p.m. There's going to be tons of records. I'm assuming maybe they're holding out on some good stuff that they're going to have over there, so I'm super excited about that, because not only will we be digging, but we're also going to be...
We'll be playing from 5 to 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we'll be there just doing stuff.
So we'll be there a long time, because they're going to be there digging beforehand, probably a little bit, and then playing from 5 to 10. So looking forward to that. And is there anything you wanted to highlight, Ken?
Yeah. Before I do, though, what's the hours for that event again?
I believe it was 12 p.m. to 10 p.m.
Okay,
so it's a
that's
long
pretty sweet.
Time. Yeah.
So that gives me some time to drive from the East Valley over there.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's like a bar restaurant. So
cool. It's a, like, not a brewery, but
they have.
Do they brew their own?
I think they have a couple microbrews.
It's like one of the only places on the west side. Like, it was the first place that had like craft beer.
Nice.
I guess you can say so.
All right. On tap. Sounds like I'll be exploring then.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe we'll see you out there.
Yeah. So some events I want to highlight. First of all. Actually, every Saturday night, my Basement Tapes crew, shout out to Ricky T and DJ Vex. We play at the Crescent Ballroom, and we have residents there. We'll be there until the end of January. So every Saturday night from 10 to 2, it's a balcony party. So if the weather's nice, you know, we'll be outside on the balcony. Otherwise, we'll be inside on the lounge. We've been there for a couple of weeks now, and each night has been amazing. So it's free. It doesn't cost anything. So if there's a show, come early, check out the show, but stay late and hang out with us. So that's every Saturday night at Crescent Ballroom downtown. Other than that, on Thursday nights, Basement Tapes, me and my crew, we actually do a radio show on Radio Phoenix. Shout out radiophoenix.org. You can catch our show from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Thursday nights. And you can always go online and listen at radiophoenix.org. And we also throw them up to Mixcloud. Be sure to follow us on Instagram to get updates. That's where we're playing at. That's basementtapes.phx on Instagram. That's that song.
Yeah, I actually just listened to the show the other night, and I was listening to you guys talk, and I was laughing. I'm trying to think of what portion that made me laugh, but it was Ricky T was talking.
Yeah.
And she was saying something. I think you guys were talking about Anderson.
Yeah, that's a harsh subject for some of us.
Oh my gosh, and I was dying laughing.
We're big fans, but, you know, we have conflicting views on the album. So, I mean, we usually just talk about music and play whatever we want to play. Sometimes it's anywhere from hip-hop to soul, house music, techno. It's a pretty fun show, and it's just us just kind of talking about music together, so...
And then, like they said, if you aren't able to listen to the live episode on RadioPhoenix.org, they can go on the Mixcloud because it'll be archived, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, awesome. And I believe if you're on Mixcloud, you can actually follow the show so that you'll get notifications, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's how Mixcloud works. You can follow DJ Vex on Mixcloud, or you can follow me, DJ My God Complex. And we usually repost the show on our pages, so it's pretty easy to track down. But if you hit us up on Instagram, we'll just send you a link. Like, here, go listen to this.
That's the easiest way, exactly. Because some people, honestly, you'd be surprised with the podcast how many people, like, because it'll tell us the stats and whatever.
Yeah.
And people, well, we tell them, like, oh, it's on this format platform. And people, we get so many listens through just clicking the link in our profile.
Yeah.
So the links, I guess the link is the link to getting people there.
The link, yeah. It's like, you don't want to do the work, like go and tag people's pages or send them text messages with the link.
So bad,
but sometimes, hey, you know, you want people to hear it. So
yeah, I know, promo. So Andrew, oh wait, has anybody had any pickups?
Pickups. What did I get recently in the mail? I got some Soundway stuff, which is a label, overseas label. DJ, I think his name is Echo. I picked that up, and then I've just been kind of restocking some old stuff that I had. You know, collecting records, like, I've collected for years, but I ended up selling a bunch of stuff, and then now that I'm playing vinyl again out places, it's like, oh, I wish I had that. I still have that. And then you go looking, like, I don't have that. So then you have to go and track it down again. So I picked up some remixes from Khan. One was a Sylvester remix that I dug. I've been listening to that for a while, and he put out a remix a little while ago. I got it from Turntable Lab. So that's about it for me. I got a lot of gift cards for Christmas, so I'm gonna blow some money pretty soon on some new stuff.
And that's the best, because it's like it's not money, it's the gift card, so you're like, I can just go wild.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, I never would spend money on this, but who cares?
Exactly. Yeah. It's in the gift card.
Yeah. What about you guys?
I got a couple of things for Christmas. A couple Mexican LPs.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. I found you some stuff. And then I got some 45s that I actually just played today, this morning. And then, gosh, what else? You got me the Sharon Jones Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
The Holiday Soul Party. Yeah. I wanted that one so really bad. And then we've been trying to be good. That's like we always say. We've been trying not to buy as much. Oh, like to be a little bit more selective. So we're like, oh, okay, like. Yeah. Our pickups aren't as insane.
Yeah, I actually sold some records, some stuff that I've been holding on to for since like 2014 from Record Store Day.
How's that being selective working out for you guys? Because I have a problem with that.
You know, it's really hard to like actually think about what you want to buy. Because like our Discogs cart, there's stuff. I'm like, I'm going to buy that eventually, but I don't know when I'm going to buy it.
Yeah. That's and then much. You get an email, your cart has changed. Yeah, and you're like, no!
Yes!
Like, damn it!
Yes.
Someone bought it.
He'll do that. He'll be like, damn it! Yeah. And I'm like, what? He's all, the thing got out of the cart. And I'm like, oh, well, we'll find it again. It'll be, if you know, and nowadays the way it is too, it's like, if you really want something, you can find it.
Yeah.
Like, if you truly want to just pay for it, like, you can go on Discogs. It's really rare. There's probably only like one record that I want that I cannot find. It's on Discogs, the Thursday with Doves, right?
It was actually on Discogs not too long ago.
Oh, thanks for telling me.
But it was like out of control expensive.
It's really expensive. It's a 10-inch. And because it basically, it's a record that was specifically for members. So have you ever heard of a band called Thursday?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they had a 10-inch that they pressed like, I don't know, it was probably 10 years ago now.
Yeah.
And it was only for the people in their fan club. So there was only probably like, I don't know, there's less than 500. There's like
250.
Yeah, 250. That's
wow.
It. So I can't ever find that damn thing. And I'm looking for it. But then I've seen it a few times and it's just so out of control that I cannot justify it.
What's the breaking point? Like,
I think the most expensive record I've ever bought was like $160.
That's a lie.
It's $240.
That's a straight up lie.
We bought that when we were on vacation in California.
No,
too.
So for Christmas one year, I bought him the very first pressing, and this was before it was. And that's what's cool though, because nowadays stuff is being repressed and reissued. So to me, like, our mentality is like, okay, if there's you got the OG press and then you have like the reissue. Mm-hmm. If there's such a disparity in the price, I'm going to save my dollars and I'm going to get the reissue.
Yeah.
But if there's not that much, it's maybe like a $20, $30 difference. I might just be like, oh, I'll just get the OG. Yeah. It just depends.
For me, it's like I have to figure out what I'm going to do with it, right? Is this a record that I just want to sit at home and have it and play it like once or twice a year? If that's the case, then I might spend a lot of money on it, right? But if it's something that I'm taking the play out, I'm definitely going to spend $20 on the reissue. You know, I don't want to be taking like $100 records out to play. I had a Tarika Blue original pressing, and it was like right when Dilla passed away and everybody was going nuts trying to find everything that he touched. And I paid like $75 for it. And then, of course, I had to go out and stunt. So I'm playing like, yeah, I got this. Messed around, had too many beers, and then it's gone. So,
oh my God, are you serious?
Yeah, what? It happens. So, you know, I when it comes to expensive records, I really have to figure out, okay, what's the purpose behind it? And so that's kind of how I limit myself on, you know, what to buy or not.
Do you ever have like you have an OG and then you buy the reissue so that you don't have to take the OG out? Like
there's certain records that I have done that you end up getting 4 and 5 copies of the same thing just because I'm a Blue Note jazz collector. So a lot if I ever see like original pressings from the mid 60s, like hard bop stuff, Wayne Shorter, Herbie Hancock, all of that type of stuff, I'm just going to buy it. And I don't care how many copies I have of it. I'll just buy it and have the OG and then maybe get some other ones to play out. So, yeah, I do that for sure.
Yeah, so the I always beg on here, even though anyone that's in charge of actually doing this probably is not listening, but I want them to reissue Janet's catalog. I don't understand why it hasn't been. Like, everybody can get Control and Rhythm Nation, but, like, Janet and everything forward, it's harder to get. And I have Velvet. I have 2 copies of Velvet Rope. But I don't have Janet.
Yeah.
And I want it. But it's getting to the point where I'm just probably going to buy it.
I think I just have Janet on CD. But yeah, the reissue game is interesting to me because I just sit and I watch. And some things I'm like, okay, this is prime for a reissue. So I'm going to hold back and see if it comes. And sometimes it comes and sometimes it doesn't, right? So then you end up missing on some stuff, but.
Sometimes some of the stuff that they do reissue, I'm like, why you reissue that? Like, and it's not a knock because I know it's a classic album. Sure. I enjoy it. But like Rumors from Fleetwood Mac, I'm like, how many times does that really need to be reissued?
Oh, we found a different recording of this that we're going to put on a third record for you.
Yes.
You
know,
it's just money grabs sometimes, right? Right now, vinyl is big. There's a lot more with millennials coming into the market and really, you know, having their buying power. And interest in vinyl, they're like, let's get as much money as we can. So let's throw it out. So, you know, I don't know. I still have like this Frank Ocean album, the Blonde album in my cart in Discogs. And it's stupid because I didn't get it when it came out. Now it's like $200. And I'm like, I really want that record, but I don't know about that. So
it's one of those things where you're like, about. So speaking of millennials, you're a Gen Xer, right?
I am.
So with that being said,
do you know the number one song on the date of your birth?
No, I should look that up. Oh, nah. I feel like it's an Elton John song. Am I close?
It is an Elton John
song. Oh my God, you're amazing.
Island Girl was the
okay.
Song.
Cool. Sweet. And
do you know so there was something on with the internet. I just said the internet because I don't know what exactly
it
was
on. It was like Facebook and Instagram.
Okay.
Like when the number one song when you're 14 years old, when you turn 14, is that like supposed to define your life? Do you know what song that is?
Okay, hold on. I got to do some maths.
So right? 89, right?
So 89, November of 89, the number one song. Let's see, what grade? That's like 8th, 9th grade. I'm going to go with... No, that's pretty close, right? That it could be that. But I'm going to go with like a Madonna song. I don't know.
All right, I'll do the top 10 for you.
Yeah, let's go 10 to 1, right?
Okay. Number 10 was Back to Life, Soul to Soul.
Legit, I bought that like that year, so I got it.
Number 9 was Alice Cooper, Poison.
Okay.
Number 8 was New Kids on the Block, Didn't I Blow Your Mind?
Yep.
Number 7 was Richard Marx, Angelia.
I don't know that one.
I don't know that one either. Billy Joel, when did it? When didn't the start? The start.
We,
the
we didn't start, we didn't start the fire. The
fire. Yeah.
Yeah, so, that one was probably on its way because that one got to a pretty high on the charts. I'm pretty sure. So.
Number five was "Listen to Your Heart," Roxette.
Yeah.
Number four was Paula Abdul. It's just the way.
Way that you love me. It's just the way that you.
Paula. Number three was B-52's "Love Shack." Number two was "Blamed on the Rain," Milli Vanilli.
Yep.
Okay, number one.
And number one was "When I See You Smile," Bad English.
I don't know that song.
if we play, you'd probably be like, oh.
I probably would be like, oh, it's that song. Yeah. That's a pretty good chart. Yeah, I had to think about it because that's when I was starting high school and stuff. That's pretty good.
It's eclectic.
I wouldn't have guessed any of those, though. So
it's all good.
But it's hard when someone puts you on the spot and they're like, do you know
what it is? It's like, what? I wasn't prepared for this.
Yeah. But the fact that you even knew Elton John was like
on your day. Hey, well, I think about the time period and like Elton John couldn't miss, right? He had a time period where he was just boom, boom. It didn't matter what song it was. I mean, I listened to like some of those classic albums like the Goodbye Yellow Brick Road album and like, it's crazy stuff. So I just guessed Elton John. I didn't.
But that was a good guess.
That was a good guess.
It was a good guess. Spot on. It was literally spot on. So just so people can get to know you a little bit. So are you from here?
No, I'm not. I'm a transplant, like probably 75% of the people I meet here, right? I was born and raised in Detroit, Michigan, and I grew up there, went to school there. Started collecting records there. My dad actually collected records since the early 60s. And then when I got to be 16 or so, him and my mom split like maybe when I was 10 or so. And I went to his place and he had in retrospect, you look at these things differently now that I'm older, but I remember being 16 and visiting with him, and he was like, hey, I want to give you something. I'm going to give you all this vinyl. And I'm like, oh, this is the best thing ever, because music has always been a big part of my life. Like, there's stories about me being 2 years old and, like, in a wedding, and then they started playing the music and me dancing down the aisle and everybody freaking out. But he gives me all this vinyl, and that kind of kicked off my whole vinyl obsession at 16. I can remember spending money on like Bobby Brown, Don't Be Cruel, and like Do What You Like, the 12 inch by Digital Underground, like some of the first purchases that I had. But yeah, once I started collecting vinyl in Detroit, I never really DJed or anything like that, but people knew I had all this vinyl, so I would get visitors that would come over and be like, hey. And then I think what got me here was I moved a couple times for work. I lived in South Carolina for 2 years before. After I left Michigan after I graduated high school to go into service for 4 years. And I lived in North Carolina and South Carolina, and then I lived in Japan for a year, which was pretty cool. Came back and moved back to Detroit. And then in 2012, I left Detroit, lived in South Carolina from 2012 to 2014 before moving out here in 2014. So I've been here for almost 5 years now. So, yeah, I love it.
So what kind of music did your parents listen to growing up?
My parents, so in Detroit is 80% African American, like the inner city. So all the radio stations in Detroit, like there's this big, you know, rock history in Detroit too, right? Like MC5 and, a lot of the punk stuff started there. Techno came from Detroit. So even though it's 80% black, and, you know, I was always raised on like R&B music and soul music, because I'm from the generation right as hip hop was born and started to take off. That was always my thing. But what was cool about Detroit is that you would have the radio station that was playing, like the radio stations were set up where they would pay, you know, 65% R&B, 10% rap music, and then they would play like random new wave music and rock music just in the same mix. So I grew up listening to all kinds of stuff. Like my dad would have like Jimi Hendrix stuff and Edgar Winter stuff and even some like Howlin' Wolf stuff, like blues and just all kinds of music was in my house growing up. So it was pretty cool, which probably leads to why my musical taste is like all over the place. So.
Do you think other people in Detroit are like that just because it has so much history there? Or
no. It's sad, though. I think a big part of, you know, there's a lot of people there that I think grew up listening to the same stuff as I did. But the downside of Detroit being 80% African-American, it's hard for people to, I guess, have the balls enough
branch
to
kind of,
yeah, to branch out, right? And even myself, I can remember, you know, liking certain things, but kind of being afraid to show that I liked those types of things when I was there. So I think a lot of people get kind of stuck in a rut and just end up listening to like R&B and hip hop stuff.
Which they just stay safe, like safe in their place.
Yeah, yeah, they stay safe. But what's interesting enough is that if you go to, you know, you go out into the clubs, at least, you know, in my early 20s or so, when I would go out to the clubs, you would hear all kinds of stuff, techno music and new wave music and all kinds of stuff in the clubs. So everybody plays it in the clubs, but they won't play it in their car when they're driving down the street. It's weird, you know.
They're not going to bump it in the
car. Yeah, they're not bumping it in the car. But if you throw Mesopotamia on by the B-52s, everybody in Detroit knows it, you know.
So like you said, you were able to kind of like find your, of course you love R&B and all that stuff because you grew up with it. It's familiar. It's what you know. Yep. There's no doubt about that. But you're like, I was able to branch out and learn about other stuff myself, whether it was going out and discovering it, or I'm sure like you'd read, like with me, a way that I would discover music, because where I grew up too, it was like, in the neighborhoods that I grew up in, everybody mostly listened to like hip-hop, R&B, or rap. So it's like I started discovering other music myself, and it was like if I liked one band, I would read the liner notes and they would thank some other band. I'd be like, oh, let me go listen to that.
Yes. You know, that kind of thing. Yeah, you had to do the education. I think a big part of it for me was once I left, the time that I had in the service really just kind of let me know that I can do whatever I want and it doesn't really matter. I mean, I think everybody's a little skittish graduating from high school and being that young.
Yeah, but it's an awkward time.
Yeah, but once you get out on your own and there's nobody really to say, hell no, this is wrong, then you just do whatever you want. And so I would go down those rabbit holes like what you're just talking about. And then also what was cool was having people from all parts of the world or the country that I was stationed with. So I met my best friend in the service was from Toledo, which isn't far from Detroit, but we were completely different as far as what we listened to. And we got stuck being roommates because you don't have a choice when you're in the Marines. And he listened to my stuff. I listened to his stuff. And we kind of exposed each other to different things. And I think it was also a good time because you had like grunge that was really jumping off. And we had a friend that was from Seattle and that put us up on a bunch of those bands like the Soundgarden and some of the bigger bands. And then we had a friend that was from Brooklyn. And so he would bring like underground stuff to us. Like I remember the first time I heard Wu-Tang Clan, he played that for me. And I was just like, what is this? And I actually remember taking it back home on leave and playing it for some people in Detroit. And they're like, dude, that's trash. Get out of here. So on and so forth.
Well, that's what we're watching this thing. And there's some people that said that they were like played Wu-Tang and they're like, this is not going to work. Karate.
This is not,
like, this is weird. This is too weird.
Crazy thing is, a year later, I go back on leave and they're like, cash rules everything. I'm like, dude, I tried to tell you about this a year ago. Oh, but yeah, being away, I think that that's kind of exposed me to different music. And then, like, just because I was a lover of music, I remember hearing things and then going down those rabbit holes, like you talked about. So, for a great example is, even though I grew up in Detroit and it's kind of blasphemous, like I think I take certain things, I take Motown for granted for sure. Like I never really studied Motown until I got older because I used to hear it all the time to the point where it was like, oh, Stevie Wonder again, or, you know, stuff like that. And so I remember being in a service in North Carolina and I was watching this show on BET called Video Vibrations back in the day. They used to play like they would have blocks of videos or whatever. And then, like, usually on this show, they would have, like, a block of, like, Brand New Heavies and Omar or some weird stuff that I never would have heard. And then they played Jamiroquai, who was, like, one of my favorite bands forever. And I remember seeing the video for Light Years on Video Vibrations and being like, what the f- is this, right? And so then I started going down the rabbit hole like you talked about. So I start, there's no internet, by the way, right, to do this. But you start going out and getting magazines and trying to figure out how you can find more information. So
put the pieces together.
Yeah, put the pieces together. So you go out, you find the CD, and then you start listening, right? And then I start reading all these interviews, and they're like, he sounds like Stevie Wonder, blah, blah. And I'm like, I listened to Stevie Wonder my whole life. I just don't hear it, right? So then I'm like, maybe I wasn't hearing Stevie Wonder right. So now that I'm in this...
You had a grudge against Stevie.
Right. But now that I'm in this Jamiroquai hole, right, and I'm like in my early 20s, actually, I'm... Yeah, about maybe about 19 or 20, I'm like, let me go back and do the Stevie Wonder education, right? So now I'm buying Songs in the Key and all these Stevie Wonder albums and really starting to listen to them. And then I'm like, I still don't hear the Jamiroquai thing, but I love Stevie Wonder now, right? And then it's like, okay, who's playing with Stevie Wonder, right? Not just who he's thanking, but who are the band members that's playing with Stevie Wonder? And then I would go down those holes like that. So the rabbit hole thing is definitely how you end up learning about different music. And that's, like I said, I'm a jazz fan. That was really big for me in getting the jazz, because when I decided that I decided in like 99, I need to learn jazz. And then I would just, I started with like the best three jazz albums according to the internet that I should have, like Kinda Blue and some Dave Brubeck and Ella Fitzgerald album. But then I started going through and looking at who's playing here. Okay, I like this guy's drumming style, which led me to Art Blakey, which led me to all the Jazz Messengers, which led me to Wayne Shorter and so on and so forth, and Miles's big his great quintets. So that's how I study music. And whether it's jazz or hip hop or soul, whatever I dive into, I end up that rabbit hole thing you talked about, it's really big for me. So
that's me. I get excited about something and I just start, like, I just like, there's most of the things that I'm into, whether it's records or anything else, because there's other stuff that I'm into that, like, I don't know, like, I very rarely just kind of into something. I'm usually like fully into something.
Yeah.
There's a shirt that you probably need, and Julian actually too. Have you seen that shirt that says "I read the liner notes"?
Yes. So it was funny you bring up that shirt. That's a shirt that I think Zoe, from who is the musical director for the Foreign Exchange, and he has a couple solo projects. He put that shirt out.
Oh, really?
And Zoe is a friend of mine from back in Detroit.
Oh, my God, how funny.
Because he used to be in this band called Gorilla Funk Mob. And right around the time that I started, like the early 2000s, they were playing for a lot of Detroit local people. And he ended up moving from Detroit and moved to D.C. And that's how he hooked up with Fonte and them, as far as the Foreign Exchange. And now he does his own thing. But it's hilarious that you bring up that shirt, because it's like, for me, it's like 2 degrees of separation.
Yeah, you're like, hey, you know? I know that shirt.
I'm like, now I'm going to have to text him like, hey, we're talking about your shirt on this podcast.
So do you have a shirt, that shirt?
I don't have that shirt, but I have a couple of his other shirts. But as soon as you said that, I'm like, ah, that's old shirt.
Have you ever had a conversation with Julian, like an actual conversation, like a deep? Because you can learn,
man,
crazy
listen,
stuff about
him. Julian, I can't do it with him. He will take me down the rabbit hole of rabbit holes. Because, like, we'll just message each other, or he'll post something, and I'll see it, and I'll be like, oh, this is stuff. And then next thing I know is, juice, 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 juice. And I'm like, oh, I can't do this right now, Julian.
Oh my gosh, I know.
Right. But that's what's cool about, you know, to bring it back to me coming here to Phoenix. I found when I leave or move to a different place, and you got to find the people who like the records, because they're going to tell you where everything is or expose you to some new stuff that you never knew about. Like, I can remember my first 2 years here, I just kind of stayed in the house because I'm like, I wasn't really down about moving here, but I had to get my job and situation, my family
situation, all
of that together. And then when I finally decided to come out, I'm like, let me find the people who know the music, because that's how I'm going to get in touch with the things that I really like. So it's been cool meeting you guys and Julian and Dela and Coco and just everybody in the scene here. So I'm excited to be here, and I'm not going anywhere. So
that's, I know. When I saw, I was telling Dela actually, I told her, I said, when I saw the basement tapes at Crescent, when I saw that residency, I was like, these people are not from here. And then I meant that in a positive way, and yeah, nothing against my city, because I love my city. I'm born at Razor, so
yeah.
But I was like, there's no way these people are, like, I just don't, because the type of style and music, it's just, unfortunately, you don't see that a lot here. So like, you might go to places like Detroit or some places in LA or wherever, yeah, some what's considered like a bigger market, and they, you know, you can find that stuff, but here you don't really have an avenue for that. So I was really excited that you guys decided to do that. So how did that come about?
So Basement Tapes is interesting, because DJ Vex moved here probably about 6 months after I did, and he's from Pittsburgh. And so Vex comes here, and it was just him. So he was just grinding, kind of doing his DJ thing on his own. He had got the show at Radio Phoenix, and he had done it for probably about a year before we hooked up. How me and him hooked up was right when I got the urge to kind of start going out and finding things. I was talking with friends from Detroit, and I talked with my friend House Shoes, DJ House Shoes, who lives out in LA now. House Shoes has a record label and stuff like that, but from House Shoes is one of the people who I kind of came up DJing under in Detroit. And so House Shoes was like, yo, you should holler at my man Vex, who's there. And they know each other from doing hip-hop shows, where Vex would come to Detroit and play, or House Shoes, or would go to Pittsburgh and play. He's like, you should holler at Vex. He's good people. I think you guys would really hit it off. And so Vex was doing a night at Valley Bar called Afro Heat, and it's still an ongoing thing. Yeah. Usually about once every 2 weeks or once a month at least, he does a night where it's all Afrobeat and like African inspired music. And so I went. What was interesting is that me and Shoes had that conversation on a night that I found the flyer for Afro Heat and was like, honey, we're going to this tonight. And so we go, and it was after I had the conversation with Shoes, and Shoes that hit him up, and he was like, yeah. So we exchanged numbers and everything. And then he invited me down to the radio station, and I thought I was just going to hang out. And he was like, no, man, get the microphone. We're getting on the air. We're going to talk, so on and so forth. And I'm like, oh. And so we started talking, and it turns out we know so many of the same people. Wajid is, like, good friends with Vex, and I know Wajid from Detroit. And so everybody kind of co-signed the whole thing. And Vex was kind of getting to the point, I think, where he may have been tiring of doing the show. And he asked me to kind of come on and be a co-host, because we just had good energy together and we like similar stuff. And so I did. And then from there, Ricky T was listening to the show. And one day she's just like, yo, I want to come down. And that's kind of how she is. She's the loud
one. She's from the Bay.
Yeah, right? She's from Oakland. And so she's the one that is out front, like, for us. Like, we're like, okay, come on down. So she comes through, and it just kind of worked, where we just formed this team, and it eventually we just started doing the show together. And then we were like, I think Vex or somebody at Valley Bar or somewhere came up with the idea of us all playing together and basically playing what we play on the show, but out and about. And I'm like, I'm down. And Ricky T's like, well, you know, I don't think I'm that good of a DJ. I'm aww, like, just get up there and play the songs.
You're like, do what you do.
Yeah. Which is how I learned, because I remember when I first started wanting to DJ, I had all these records forever. And like I said, everybody knew I had records, but I never would play them out. And people would invite me out, and Shoes brought me out, and it was my birthday. I brought records. And he's like, bring some joints down to play, man, so on and so forth. And so I bring a bag of records, and I'm like trying to give them to him, like, go play these. He's like, get your ass up there and play them. And I'm like, oh, okay. So that's how I started. And so that's what I know. And I'm like, look, you just have to go up there and play the records. It'll work. You'll learn. And that's kind of how we came together. And since then, we've been together now for I think almost a year and a half, and it's just kind of taking off with us getting invited to do different stuff. We all do our solo things still, but we're like, I don't know.
Like
I
want to collective.
I want to say like... Voltron or something. For me, that's kind of been how I've thrived. Like even back in Detroit, like I had crews of people who I hung out with, and it feels good to be around like-minded people, you know. So
that's what I always tell people, because you know, we're doing the like, dude, just us collecting over the years, and then even just doing the podcast, it like, you know, opens up different doors and whatnot. But I always tell people like, that when you're wanting to organize or do something, like stuff will happen organically. And I know people, that words, people are like, but it's true. Like you just go out there, you put yourself out there, you'll meet like-minded people and people that you vibe with and stuff. It's not like, don't be, I always tell people like, I know you want to like be put on, but like, don't be in such a rush. Like just have fun. Like just have fun with it, you know?
Yeah. And I think the other, I think the thing is like, for us, it's cool because we would be playing the music at home anyway, or we would be going out to a bar and drinking anyway. So now we just get to go out to the bar and play the music.
And be behind the turntable.
Yeah, it's, we're not trying to be superstars or anything. We just want to have a good time, you know? So it's cool.
That's what I tell people too. Like when he plays or I play, or like with the group that I'm in with my girl Edna, the Crate Creepers or whatever, where I'm like, we're just having fun. We like to share music and we like to get people, for people to have a good time. So that's what we're trying to do. So how long have you actually been DJing?
If we count, I mean, I've played records my whole life, right? But I didn't play in public for the first time until maybe 2003-ish, 2004. Like I said, I was managing a record store in Detroit. I got fired from a job when I was young. And then I was like, I need a job. And I stumbled into this store and I was wearing a Brazil soccer jersey. And it turns out the guy who owned the store had grew up in Brazil. So it just worked out. He's like, hey, you want to work here? I'm like, damn right, I want to work here. And so like that turned into like a 7-year relationship where I was managing the store. And then we ended up opening a couple other stores. And from doing that in Detroit, I mean, we sold CDs and video games and DVDs and a lot of vinyl and stuff. And from doing that in Detroit, it was like at the time, post Dilla moving to LA, really. But when I look at it, like you had all the Slum Village guys would come to the store, or you would have Black Milk would come in and just kind of hang out. Elza would come in. I didn't even know he was Elza, but we would just talk about music for 2 hours. And then, you know, I didn't find out that he's Elza until he's on the cover of some paper with Slum Village.
Did you have a moment and you're like, what?
I had the funny story here is that, like, seriously, he had came in the store maybe about 3 weeks prior and ordered a Big L record that was on a CD that we didn't have in stock for whatever reason. And so me and him talk about Big L for like an hour, right? And I'm like, okay, cool, give him some daps on and so forth. And he leaves the store. And this was right around the time that after Dilla left Slum Village. And so on the cover, they have like a weekly called Real Detroit that comes out, I think it was, or Metro Times, one of those two. It was right after they did the remix for Daft Punk, Slum Village remix for Daft Punk. And I'm listening to that remix and I'm like, I know this voice, you know, I'm like, this is dope, so on and so forth. The problem here is that like, because I was gone in the service, I missed like, you hear about Detroit in the hip hop shop days, like with Eminem and Proof and all these MCs.
So you were away?
I was away. So I missed all of that. And I came back for kind of post that. So post that, you have some groups that had like Dwele, Elza, Big Tone, like all in groups together performing in different places. And so I caught that in. So I would see these guys out, but I didn't know them or anything. I knew Shoes. That was my guy, right? So anyway, I ordered this Big L record. And literally like 2 weeks later, I'm just, the weekly paper gets dropped off at the record store and I'm looking and it's like the new Slum Village and it has their names. And I'm like, Elza, this is Elza? Are you kidding me? So the next time I run into him was at a show, like at St. Andrews. And we're just downstairs and I'm like, oh man, you know, we talked a long time, many times, about music, and I never knew that you were Elzon. That's pretty crazy.
Did he say
it? Yeah, he's like, and that's pretty, he pretty much said, can I cuss?
Yeah, yeah.
He said, he pretty much said, that's why I fuck with you. Because it never was about who I am. It was always about music.
You weren't looking for a comment. Yeah. You were just talking to him.
And he was like, here's my number. If you ever need anything, call me. So on and so forth. To this day, like, we kick it whenever, like, there's a new project that comes out. Especially now that I'm here and doing the show, like, he'll send me stuff like, yo, play this. And I've made a lot of friendships with, like, a lot of hip hop guys. Me and Black are, like, pretty cool. Whenever he comes, he's like, guest list you down, blah 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 blah, or whatever. Because like my store was, when he was doing Sound of the City, like we were banging that thing out of the store, because I'm like, no, you need this, you need this, and like my name's in the liner notes in his album. Like, thanks for your help, blah 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 blah. And so like Black and me are cool. Sky Zoo from Brooklyn, we hooked up back on MySpace days, right?
MySpace.
We booked up back on MySpace, and I kind of, you know, got him in touch with Black Milk and Hex Murder and all these guys that he rocks with. And so I remember going to New York in 2006, and he was just like, yo, just hit me up when you get here. And we just like went and hung out, and to this day, like, me and him are cool. So it, I have a lot of relationships with a lot of hip hop people like that, but it's interesting. I don't even know what the question you asked
no,
me was.
No, this is what the podcast is for. But I will say, I feel like you need a shirt that said my name's in the liner notes.
I only got one liner notes mentioned, but maybe, you know.
So we were just talking about DJing, so, and how you got started and stuff. Oh, like,
yeah.
That, so.
Yeah.
So, well, then this is my question, because anytime someone has worked at a record store, I always ask this question because I get different answers.
Yeah.
What do you feel like is a misconception people have about record stores? Because you know how, like, some people, this is like, we did one episode, I think it was like our second or third episode, it was about like record store etiquette, and one of the things that I said was, like, I understand that people still want like those bottom of the barrel prices, but like, if you're gonna walk into a record store, you're gonna pay that finder's fee and like all this other stuff, so people will complain. But do you think, like, so what do you have anything that you would say, like, is that you would want people to know?
I think the biggest thing for me, and because of the air when I was there, I mean, I'm 12 years removed from the record store, but when I was there, it was right during the time frame where independent stores were struggling to survive because of the big box stores being able to buy things at discounts, right? So I can remember, this is hilarious. So there was this store in Detroit called, and I don't know if it's still there, but it was called Justin's. And it was an indie store, and it was right next to a high school. So it's like the perfect place to have a record store. It doesn't matter what comes out. You're going to sell a crap load of them because these kids are going to come buy them. At least at that time, because, again, people weren't streaming. There was no downloading or anything like that. So I can remember having a conversation with this guy that comes in the store. He's like, mad because he wanted to buy Jaquan Tipsy, whatever that album was.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you remember that song?
Yeah, yeah.
He wants to buy that album. He's like, why are y'all charging $15.99 for this album? You know, I can go to Target and get it for $11.99. And I'm just like, I'm like, dude, do you see how many copies of Jaquan we have? We have like five of them, bro. Like, there's no way that we can buy enough
thousands,
of them.
Thousands, yeah.
Yeah, thousands of them. And he's like, well, Justin's has it for $12.99. And I'm like, you know where they are too? They're right next to a high school. They're going to sell 60 copies of it the day that it comes out, because every kid is going to come and buy it. Like, that's just not how it works. So I think the biggest thing that I would charge people to understand is that the indie store is where you're going to be able to come and find those things that you can't find at Target, or you can't find at Best Buy, or whatever the big box is, right? And in addition to that, you're going to be able to come in there and talk to us for 2 hours about music, and we're going to put you up on some stuff that you don't know about that's going to change your freaking life. So, like, don't even trip, man. It's worth the experience to meet the people, be in touch with the people, and find out about everything else that's going on. Like, I mean, if you're, I get it, everybody wants to save money, right? But at some point, you have to fund the culture. That's what I think it's about. So I'll always support independent stores. And if I can buy something from a record store, even, and no disrespect, but even like the bigger stores like Zia or whatever, things like that, I try to get things more from smaller stores if I can, even if it's more expensive, because I don't want those stores to go out of business. I want them to be around forever. So that's that would be the one thing that I would want people to know. And like, you have situations now when I look back, and again, I'm, you know, so many years removed, but people to this day will hit me up like, yo, thank you for putting me up on this particular album, or I came in the store and you were playing this and it changed my life, or because of this record, I met this person and now I'm doing something completely different with my life. I guarantee you that nobody from Best Buy gets those things, you know.
So. Yeah, it's kind of like you're saying, it's not, you can say the word customer service, but yeah, it's more of like the personable aspect that you get when you walk into a smaller store, because yeah, they're able to take the time out to talk to you usually, and like you're saying, put you onto stuff that maybe you wouldn't know about or anyone that you know. So it's like, that's always tell people, because we buy online, we always say that, we buy online, right?
Yeah, we buy from Discogs online or just from any type of record store or whatever.
Anywhere that sells records.
But if we can find it locally, I will go locally. Like Stinkweed carries a lot of the Coal Mine and Big Crown stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'll go to them and see if they have it.
Yeah.
Instead of pre-ordering online, I'll go see, hey, are you guys taking pre-orders?
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, we're taking pre-orders. So now I know I'm putting that money back into my community, back into my culture. I mean, I might pay a little bit more, but even if I do, it's okay.
Yeah.
Because I don't mind doing that.
Yeah.
You know where your money's going, in a sense. Like, when I go there, like, I don't know the owner, but I know who the owner is. And I see all the other endeavors that she has going on, and she always puts back into the community. So I know I might pay like $2 or $3 more for that 45, but I see where it's going.
Yeah,
you know what
absolutely.
I'm saying? So it's like, that's what I always tell people, that, yeah, you know, no judgment, no matter how you buy. I know we all have different budgets,
sure,
but if you can, you know, try to support your local stores, especially the smaller shops, to keep them open, because we have a lot of shops here in Phoenix.
Dude, I'm shocked at how many shops there are here, and I'm finding out about new ones every day. And then, like, when there's an event like the record show or whatever, like, I'm always blown away at how many records are here, especially coming from you come from Detroit. There's record stores everywhere, but like, you see a lot of the same stuff. That's been a benefit of moving and living in different places, because like, that same stuff collection is different everywhere that you go. So the same stuff that's here is not the same stuff that's there. I mean, yeah, you're going to find Herb Albert and Tijuana Brass and every Dollar Bin everywhere across the world, right?
El Martino.
Yeah, but it's...
Ingle of Humperdinck.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Humperdinck, man. I hate that guy.
But, like, it's different, like, the stuff that's sold locally here. So, like, going to these different record stores, I'm able to find some stuff like, yo... And I'll call back at the crib like, yo, you really need to come to Phoenix and see what's here for the low, bro.
That's what to say about like New York and Pittsburgh and stuff too. Yeah. Like when, or you go to Philly or whatnot, that mm-hmm. there's stuff over there that people here would pay top dollar for, and over there people are like, eh.
Yes, we take this for granted. It's a dollar, yeah, you know.
Sort of thing. Have you been to Grace Records? Just out of curiosity, it's mm-hmm. in a mall.
Yeah, it's way out like in Gilbert.
It's one of those, you know how like all the big thing now is the outdoor malls, not like the inside malls.
Oh, I heard about this record store. It's like Santan Village, right?
Yes.
I live not too far from there, but I haven't been over there yet. So I may have to check that out tomorrow.
I mean, what's nice about that space is that he prides himself on like the same prices on pretty much everything,
mm-hmm.
and everything, not, you don't have to bend down to dig. That's like his big selling point, is everything is chest level. Yeah. Every record they have is chest level.
So listen, you youngsters, I want you to know that that's a selling point for me. Because as you get older, digging becomes harder. Like, you really have to be ready. Like, I love this place, but I know that after I come in and dig for an hour, I'm going to go home and take a nap.
Yeah, and take an algae pill.
Yeah,
for us, it's dusty. I always tell him I like digging more in the winter because I always have a coat, so I'll take my coat off and put it on the floor.
Yeah, yeah. But that's part of the fun, right?
You know? But it is an aspect
it's part,
of
it's
it.
It's thrill of the hunt.
Yeah.
You never know what you're going to find in that stack.
I found, like I said, I've gone to a place that I wouldn't call it a record store, but they have records mm-hmm. there. And there's these two people, and they're like, oh, I already ran through that. There ain't nothing in there, blah, blah, blah. So I'm like, all right. So I went there, and I was talking to the workers. I was like, hey, have you guys gotten any new stock in since this time? Because this is when those people said that they ran through there.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, this is the same stuff. And I'm like, all right. Oh, my Lord. No. I'm like, you guys did not even, dent it. And I found so much stuff in there for so cheap. Yeah. I found a record that was like, I bought for $1 that was worth like $200. So that's what I'm saying. But it was, guess where it was? On the bottom. You had to dig. You had to go down there and get it. So you know, the dig is worth it. But I know I've had times where, like we told the story before, we went to, have you been to Record Jungle in California?
No. I haven't hit anything in the coast Kelly. Yet. I already know, and Shoes and like all my KT, 14 KT, all these guys in California are like, man, you better come out here. So when I go, I'm probably going to take a week next year and just go to California and kind of go and just dig the whole time. So
tell me what happened when we went to
the jungle. So the first time we went to the jungle, we were just like, I don't even know what to look for. Because it's literally just wall-to-wall, like, bins.
It would be overwhelming.
And it is extremely overwhelming. And
we had gone to Disneyland the day before.
Yeah, so we're all tired. And so this past time we spent a good couple hours there, but still, we did not even dent.
Yeah.
I just went through, like, the top bins and then a little bit of the low bins. Because it's, like, these bins behind us.
Yeah.
But literally against the walls. And I didn't even look at the 45s.
And the 45s that they have there, they're literally, they don't, I mean, they have certain ones that are of value that they sleeve, mm-hmm. but there's some that are kind of worth a little bit too, but they just have all the 45s literally like
it stacks on a spool or
but like not
yeah,
even
bins
yeah and bins. Bins they're long and they just have them in there and you just pull them out. And we got there and we were like, just seeing it made me tired.
Like, you walk in the door and you're like, dear Lord.
Yeah, you're like, oh, you're just like,
what's cool that's on the wall, because I don't have time to look at anything else.
And we tried to look, and then we were just like, you know what, we're tired from Disneyland, my feet still hurt,
yeah,
my back is still hurting. So
that's how record stores get me, though. Like, the what's cool on the wall. Yeah. I will totally walk in and get overwhelmed.
I saw you right now looking at
the wall. I will walk in, get overwhelmed, and be like, $30. I'll just pay it.
Yeah.
I'll take that one record and go on my merry way.
And I feel good about myself.
Look what I picked up. Yeah. I picked something up. I contributed to something. I hate walking out of record stores without something in my hand. It's like, I have to find something.
Have to, for sure.
Where are your dollar records at? Just let me grab something random.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like we said, just digging. That's cool that you've worked at a record store, because I didn't even know that you've done that before.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. I know we didn't even know, actually, because we interviewed Julian too, and I didn't even know. Well, I knew he had worked at a record store, but then I didn't know he had worked at Tower, and he was telling us how he worked at Tower Records and all that stuff.
Oh, man. I missed Tower
Virgin.
Records.
Virgin. Records. I'm sorry, Virgin.
I missed Tower Records, though. Like, some of those big box stores, like, I can remember during that time, like, there are some stores where I got exposed to some stuff. Like, I can remember, like, in the early 2000s, like, going into Tower Records. And there was a cool one in Michigan, and it was right next to this movie theater. So you always buy your movie tickets, right? But you allot, like, 2 hours to go just hang out in Tower Records or whatever, right? And so, like, you would just be listening to what's playing. And I can remember finding, like, crazy stuff, like Coop, Underworld, like, stuff that I may not have been into, just from them playing it and then going down that rabbit hole that we talked about earlier or whatever, or like some of the Jazz Nova stuff that came out in the early 2000s. Like, I got into all that stuff just from hearing it played in Tower Records. So, I mean, it depends on the employee base, I guess. And like, my first record store job before I managed this store was at this place called Desirable Discs in Detroit. And so it was like a two-stair, it used to be a shoe store, like a department, like a real old department store. So upstairs was like clothing and downstairs was shoes. So when they took this space in Dearborn, Michigan, like, the upstairs was all like CDs and stuff. And then the downstairs area was all records. And so I can remember it's funny because I wanted a second job at the time, and I was like, okay, I'm doing this. I got out of the service, and then I started doing like bookkeeping, and I'm like, yeah, I want to get a second job, but if I get a second job, it's going to be a record store. That's the only thing I want to do because that's all I want to be around, right? And so I think what they were doing is they were hiring employees. I know you guys have seen like Empire Records and seen like High Fidelity, those films, yeah. Right? So they were hiring employees that could fill a niche essentially and be the rap guy or be the punk girl or whatever. And I was like, okay, you know, I'll be the rap guy. It's fine.
Of course.
Yeah, it'll get me in the store and then I can do what I want to do, right? Yeah, right. So I'm the rap guy. And it was a pretty good time, too, because at the time, it's like 2099, so you got, like, all the raucous stuff coming out, you got all the slum stuff, the Soulquarian stuff popping off, so it was a good time to be the rap guy, I'll say that. But because I got there, like, that's how I got exposed to, like, so much cool stuff, like Radiohead and Bjork and Stereolab and that. From all the people that I worked with there, the first Coldplay album, which is amazing, even though I hate their newer stuff, you know, like it was a good time to be in a store like that. And then downstairs, you have my man Brad, and Brad used to be like, hey, man, come downstairs and, you know, I'm going to take a lunch if you just want to hang out down here and play some records. And they had these books down there that I would just be down there like, with some old Marvin Gaye records on and like reading these books about history, about like Prince's band and just random jazz stuff. And Brad was actually, that was the first time that I played records in a store, because Brad would be like, I'm getting out of here if you just want to beat it. And I'll play some records for a while. I'll be back in an hour. Brad actually owns a store, two stores in Detroit called People Records now. If you ever go to Detroit, that's the record store you want to go to, People's Records, and there's two locations. But, like, that store was, like, my exposure to, like, a ton of...
Because Radiohead's one of your favorite bands.
Radiohead is probably, yeah, one of my favorite bands. I think, like, it's Jamiroquai, Radiohead. I was a huge, like, Dave Matthews Band fan, like, back in the day. But Daft Punk. Like, these are all, like, kind of, like, I've never seen Radiohead live, but I definitely want to see them live. But I got exposed to, like I said, a lot of that stuff in the early 2000s. So
I feel like that was a good time for that, like, I guess what would have been considered, like, indie style music. Because It was just, like... It was just in its own, like, I don't know, like, I still listen to indie stuff now, but At the time, there was just so much good stuff getting put out there.
Yeah, yeah. And then when I started DJing, like, you know, I was big into, like, the DFA stuff out of New York. I'm finding now, and I'm just realizing this, as much as I enjoy soul music and hip-hop, and that's kind of the groundwork and how I got into DJing, I think I'm more of like a dance DJ. I'm figuring that out. I like disco, and I like discovering disco records that I may not have heard. I like breakbeats and stuff like that, but if that's the stuff that I have the most fun playing. And so, like, even like a lot of the stuff that was coming out of New York during the early 2000s on the DFA label, I dig all that stuff. I'm pretty much all over the place. So if you come and hear me play, I might play Ice Cube and then follow it with, like, Daft Punk and then come back with, like, I don't know, some punk band. That's just how I play, like, all over the place.
You just want to share everything that you love. So when you were stationed in Japan, did you pick anything up, or did you venture out? Were you able to do much when you were there?
Yeah, when I was in Japan... They had that was my first exposure to Tower Records was in Japan. I had never heard of it.
I hear that one's crazy.
It was crazy. I was stationed on Okinawa, and they have a city that was like, it was called Naha. And until that point, I mean, I was about 19 when I went, and that was probably the biggest city outside of Detroit that I mean, I've been to Windsor and Toronto, but D.C., but outside of Detroit, like, that probably was the biggest city that I've been to. And so I was blown away by the biggest thing that blew me away about the record stores there was the overall Japanese respect for American culture that we don't even have for our own American culture. So, like, I can remember like kids there coming up to me and talking, speaking English, that were, these kids couldn't have been older than 8 or 9 or 10. And they're asking about American music and things like that, which was cool. And then I can remember, like, I was there from 96 to 97. So, like, that was a good time in music, too, because you had, like, Stakes Is High coming out, like, the second Outkast album. Like, there's a ton of good hip-hop that came out during that time frame. And so I can remember going in these stores, and you would see, like, you would see, like, whatever the new release, I don't want to say bad music, but whatever the...
Like, top 40?
Top 40 stuff would be, like, discount prices. But then you would see, like, this old school De La Soul, 3 Feet High Rising, and they were, like, double the price of what something else was. And then they would have, like, this huge write-up about it, like, in Japanese, like, telling these kids why they should get this. And so it was, that was pretty cool. The biggest thing that I got in Japan, I got Traveling Without Moving, the Jamiroquai album. I got it there, and it released there because apparently Japan is, like, a huge market for Jamiroquai. I didn't know that. But, like, they had Buffalo Men, like, people with graffiti, the Buffalo Man, Jamiroquai symbol, like, on random buildings there. It was super huge. So Traveling Without Moving, it came out, like, 6 months early there before it was released here in the States. And I got – I remember picking up the export – the that issue version. It was like the European version. It had like a couple of extra tracks on it. And then when I got back to the States, I loaned it to a girl I was dating.
And that was the end of that.
And that was the end of that.
Oh, man.
Man.
I feel your pain. That's so bad.
That's probably the biggest thing that I remember picking up in Japan. But being in the service was pretty cool. I wish, I mean, looking back on it now, I would have done things differently with my money, but
hindsight,
but I used to just blow checks on music and be like, ah, I got a place to stay and they're going to feed me. So it's okay.
Exactly. Right.
Fuck it.
Right. For real.
Oh my gosh.
So your DJ name, where does that come from?
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, so my DJ name is DJ My God Complex. That's a the story is that right after, not too long after I got out in the service, I went out, like I met a girl, and like I really liked this girl. We didn't have, I think I met her taking some classes or something like that. I don't remember how we met. But I really liked her. And this is Ken at like maybe age 21, 22. And I told you guys, I didn't get my stuff together. I don't know
until
I was 26, right? But I like this girl, and we go out on a date. And the first date, we just kind of went to the movies or whatever and didn't really talk a lot. The second date, we went somewhere and sat and ate dinner and talked. And I think I talked so much during that time frame. And by the end of by like an hour into the date, she's like, you think you got it all figured out, don't you? And I don't know what was going on.
That
made her say that. But she's like, you think you got it all figured out, don't you? And then I was like, no, not really. Like trying to back on it. And she was like, you have a God complex, don't you? And I was like, I don't even know what that means really. But and then like she never caught me ever again. So then it kind of made, like, and she wouldn't return my calls or anything like that. I can remember, like, trying to hit her. She blocked me on AIM. Like, who blocks AIM. People on AIM, you know?
I know AIM,
but,
yes.
Like, it made me kind of do the research and be like, dang, like, was I conceited? Was I full of myself? What was really going on there? And I don't know, but I never heard from this girl again. And so I took that name, My God Complex, to kind of remind me to always be humble and things like that. And it's just kind of stuck with me over the years. At first, I just kind of used it as like an online moniker. But then when it was time to DJ, I was like, yep, that's the name right there. So it's kind of stuck with me over the years. And people always be like, where'd that name come from? But that's where it came from.
That's a good story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You thought you had it all.
Hey, if you're listening to this podcast, I'm sorry, lady.
Whoever you are.
I mean, it worked out. I got a beautiful family and stuff now.
Exactly.
But,
you know. You're like, I don't care.
Just saying.
I'm just saying.
Just put it out there. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So Do you have anything else?
Oh, geez, I did. I had something, but I completely forgot.
Andrew's brain is gone.
Yeah, I'm still sick.
It's the holidays, too.
So. Yeah, holiday brain.
Hey, you do anything special for this New Year's Eve?
Yeah, I wasn't planning on doing anything. Like, we didn't have anything booked group-wise. And then I got hit up by somebody on Instagram that was like, hey, I need a DJ for a party. It's a private party. It's at a mansion. And, you know, it's going to be a couple hundred people. And I just was like, a little suspect, right?
Because you're like, yeah.
Well, let me go back. When I first started DJing here, not last summer, but the summer before last, I got asked to do a private party at a mansion in Biltmore off the strength of a friend of mine. It was her boyfriend's birthday or something. And she's from Detroit. She knows my cousin, and that's how we got introduced. So you're familiar with her. So I'm familiar with her, but I don't know everybody else. So I go do this mansion party, and it was like pretty much they're like she sets it up. She's like, this guy's turning 40, and he just kind of wants like old school music, and you know maybe some 2000 stuff. And I'm like, okay, I can do that. And it was like one of the first gigs that I played out here. And so I'm like, is that a mansion? You know, what could it be? So I go, and it's like, if you know the Biltmore area, like where the mall is and stuff, mm-hmm. It's like behind there going towards Paradise Valley, I guess, where all the big houses are. Yeah. And so I think like his frat brothers and him went in on like this house for the weekend, right? And I'm like, okay. So I show up and it's like literally it reminds me of, you know, we were talking about Red Dead Redemption. It looks like a house out of Grand Theft Auto Vice City. It's like that. It's like a big U with a pool in the middle, and I'm up on this balcony and set up, and I just got my speakers and everything, so I'm feeling pretty good.
You really need them.
So I'm playing throughout the night, and I'm playing, and like people start, like there's some lady dancing around with a fire whip. It looks like electric whip that somebody's gonna attack Tony Stark's with it, right? That's what it looks like. And then like you have these other people with flaming hula hoops, and it was catered and it was pretty nice, right?
Did you eat? Did you get
well
to
eat? Yeah, so I brought one of my friends, my friend Greg Moore, shout out to my homie Greg. He's a sports writer, but he comes with me, so I'm sending him to get like drinks and lamb chops and all kind of stuff and bring them back to the DJ booth, right? And so this guy comes up and he's like, here's the other thing, like with the way that I am and because I don't really have to DJ, and you guys know how it is, I don't take requests. Like, yeah. You got to come with something really good if you want me to play it, right? But this guy, and it's pretty much the people who are throwing the party told me what to play the whole night. And I'm like, I'm not messing up this money. What are you talking about, right? So this guy comes up. First of all, nobody was supposed to be able to get to where I am, but they always get to where you are after they've had a few drinks, right? So he comes up. He's like, hey, man, you think I can get a request in? And I'm like, side-eyeing him like, nah, my homie. Greg is like, no, don't bother him. He's like, but I want to hear James Brown, The Big Payback. And I'm like, yes, you can.
I can do your
request. I can do that for you, sir. And so like right as I'm queuing it up, he's like, but the techno version. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? He's like, let me show you. It's on YouTube right here. And I'm like, get this guy out of here right now, right?
Get a gotcha.
Right. And so then he leaves or whatever. And the night's going pretty good. And then later on, after that guy, he got like really, really stoned. And he comes back up after my homie Greg went and left. And he's like, hey, man, I told you to play James Brown, the techno version. Now, because you didn't play it, it's about to go down. And I'm like, what? I'm like, this dude is threatening me for not playing this techno James Brown song. And I'm like, man, come on, get out of here, so on and so forth. And then the guy, like, in the middle of me trying to play, like, he grabs my arm, right? And now I'm like, I got the right brain and the left brain, right? The right brain, or like the good Ken and the bad Ken, right? The bad Ken is like, oh, Ken, you haven't been in a fight in like 10 years, bro. And it's like, looking around like, it's like some, like, I don't know, like James Bond things. I'm looking like, okay, if you hit him like this, you can grab this and hit him with this. You can do this. And I'm like, oh, this is bad. Then good Ken is like, Ken, what if this guy is in the frat? What if? How are you going to get your equipment home, Ken? How are you going to get paid? And then I'm like, what if they call the police? And then I'm like, okay, so how do I fix this situation, right? So I'm looking around because, again, I'm up high and everybody else is down low except for this guy that's bothering me. So
was no one paying attention to him?
No one was paying attention. So I'm like, okay, so how can I get everybody's attention? So I just turned all the music down. And, of course, everybody looks up like, what's going on? Where's the music? And I'm like, yo, come get this guy because if you don't come get this guy, everything's done. And then the frat rushes up and they grab the guy like, man, we told you not to come up here and so on and so forth. And they like kick him out the party, so on and so forth. And then like I'm like, okay, that worked. And then all of a sudden this lady at the bottom, she's like, hey, can you play Cash Money Records Taking Over for the 99? And I'm like, you know what? Okay, let's do it. So I play that. And that's pretty much how that night went as a whole. So now when I get asked to do this mansion party for New Year's Eve, I'm like kind of like on the fence.
Was it the same guy?
Yeah, it wasn't the same guy, but I'm like looking at this message like, you remember the last time you did this? So I'm like, I don't know yet. Let me go meet the guy. And so I have a conversation with the guy. But it worked out. You know, it turns out that I'm going to be able to give him what he wants. So I'm doing that party for New Year's Eve, and it's over pretty early, so I'll be able to go home and hopefully get some sleep and watch some football and drink some beers the next day. So yeah, that was a roundaway of answering that question.
No. But that was a great story.
Do you know who DJ Herm is in Tucson?
I've heard his name.
Okay. He always says he's a working class DJ because he had like a regular 9-to-5 for a long time, and then I don't know if he quit or whatever the story is, but basically he stopped doing that and he just DJs full time.
Okay, cool.
So, but he always says, because he does weddings and like all this other anything, you know, whatever. So, but he's like, it's always important you meet your client.
You have to.
He's like, you might not click with them. He's like, because it might be that they want something that you just can't give them or whatever. So like you say, and you're like, I'm trying to do it right and meet them to see if we vibe and go from there.
I got asked, I've done one wedding here since I've lived here. And in Detroit, I only did one wedding because it was a bad experience and kind of the same thing. No, I did two weddings. The first one was a bad experience. The second one was for a homeboy, and he was just like, play whatever you want.
Which
you
is, know? Yeah, you're like,
that's
all right,
I'm like, yep, I'll do it, bro. But this wedding here was the same thing. Like, a friend asked me, like, yo, do you do weddings? And I'm like, no, man. And he's like, I was like, first of all, I will never do one of my friend's weddings because it's too much work, and I would rather be partying and enjoying the friend's wedding, right? He was like, well, you do a friend of a friend. And I'm like, And I was like, have him message me and tell me what he wants. And this guy, he's like, yeah, man, me and my bride's favorite song is Lupe Fiasco, Sunshine. And I'm like, okay, piquing my interest a little bit. And then he's like, yeah, I just want you to come through and play like old school stuff and then maybe play like some, it was like a good balance of music where I didn't really feel like I was selling out to do it. And it was at the Botanical Garden, which is awesome.
Oh, it's beautiful, yeah.
So it was a pretty sweet setup. And everybody had a good time. It just worked out. But I did go meet them for an hour. We had dinner and talked before I said, okay, I will do this for you, you know. And it was a good experience. I don't know that I want to do that anymore.
Yeah, you're like, so don't be in my DMs.
Yeah, do not get in my DMs with your wedding information.
Y'all, please.
Yeah.
And that's what that guy Herm said. He's like, you know, he's like, not every DJ can do weddings. And he doesn't mean that as in a like an insult. He's just, it's just not for everybody.
It's not. I mean, I can only play Thriller so many times.
Oh, no. You know? Right? You're talking, tell him about your sister's wedding.
What?
Stephanie.
Oh, that DJ was awful. They paid a lot of money for him.
A wedding DJs charge a lot because most of them don't want to do your wedding.
Which I understand, but no, he was just like,
it was just, he didn't have a really good selection.
Yeah.
He talked a lot.
Like, no. You
know, he hit a lot of Jamaican horns. Yeah, you know, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that, but, you know, like a lot of people are like, oh, we have to do the cha-cha and all the other
No.
When we got married, I was like, I don't want any of that shit. I just want you to play cuts.
Well, we got lucky because, so Andrew's uncle is like an old school DJ or whatever. So has his, what he offered as his wedding gift to us, like, do you want me to DJ? And we're like, yeah. And I know his taste. So we're just like, you just do what you want.
Yeah.
And so it worked out really well.
So that worked out. So that was fun. But yeah, we're like, okay. But
I do have a question for you.
Yeah.
So you're obviously into hip hop. How do you feel
about
SoundCloud and mumble rap and all that great stuff that's currently coming out?
All right. So here's my theory on hip hop, right? I grew up with it, right? And I think that I used to, when I was, especially at the time when I was in the store, it was the backpack time, right? I was straight up backpack, like, man, I don't even like Jay-Z, dog. What are you talking about? Cannibal Ox, bitch. So, like, it was like, I was completely anti-commercial everything. But as I've grown older, I think that hip hop in general is a young person's genre of music, right? Like, we're just now getting to the point, and I always joke about this, that we're going to have a rapper doing a lounge act in Vegas pretty soon. It's probably going to be Snoop, like with the Vegas thing, right? Because he has enough hits or whatever.
And his audience.
And his audience is super broad. So Snoop is going to get it. I'm predicting it. You heard it here first. Snoop is going to be at like some casino, like just like Celine Dion is. That's going to happen, right?
And there's all these younger acts like Gaga, Mariah.
Yeah.
Like it's shocking.
It's only natural that like we're going to get a rapper and he's going to start doing like Ain't Nothing But a G Thing. And the audience is just going to be like, yeah. Clapping, you know. So I think because hip hop is a young person's game, and we had this conversation on our show a little while ago. Like, there isn't. I'm not a destroyer of dreams or hopes, right? But if you are over 30, it's generally not going to happen if you haven't like hit already, right? And so when I hear the genre change, I don't listen to most of the stuff, but every now and then there's a song that I'm like, okay, I can see the appeal of it, especially now that I'm playing in bars and things. I get it. last night when we played at the Valley Bar, Erica played, and Erica is maybe 10 years younger than me. So like hearing her, and she has children that are 13, 14 that listen to the Travis Scott's and all the newer stuff, right? And so she knows all that music, and so she'll sprinkle some of that stuff in her sets. And then I'm like, okay, this is cool, you know. But am I buying that stuff? Not really. But what I will say is that SoundCloud, I like SoundCloud, and I was an early adapter of SoundCloud because it did expose me to the Catronadas of the world, or exposed me to Sangos of the world, like the people that are making the things that I like. And my SoundCloud, because I've been on it so long and picked and choose who I followed, it's pretty spot on with what I like. And so I can go there and find, even like when I DJ digitally, I'm a big proponent of like the remixes of stuff. So if there is, okay, let's take Bad and Bougie, right? Bad and Bougie is like a song that I probably would never, ever play in my car. But I have a nephew who is in college right now, and it was like his jam when he was in high school or whatever. So can I go to SoundCloud and I can find some up-and-coming producers that have taken the vocals to Bad and Bougie and actually layered it on something that interests me? Absolutely. And maybe I'll download that or reach out to them and ask them, where can I buy this or send it? And I support people like that. So when it comes to mumble rap stuff, if there is a version of a song that I dig over beats and instrumentation that I feel like I can use, then I can get into it. But overall, I used to be really judgy, but now I'm like, listen, they're not making music for me, point blank, right? I can go out and I can listen to Fonte if I want to, or I can listen to J. Cole, who's probably as close to the younger generation, or I like Kendrick, I like those people.
That's what Dayla said. How funny. You know, it's the same exact thing.
Yeah, I can listen to those people because they're making the music today that would have been the tribes or De La's or
of their time.
So I can listen to those people and I'm fine with it. And I know that there's also a place for, you know, the other stuff. And to be honest, even when I was coming up, yeah, I was backpacked, but if I went to the strip club, I didn't want to hear Mos Def in that mug. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, this is the
like,
time
can y'all put White T or Little John on or something? This it's a time and a place for everything,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, and now I especially have to be really picky because I have a little girl. And she's 3, so I pick and choose what I want to hear in the car. Right now, her favorite song in the world, I mean, of course I have to listen to My Little Pony and stuff like that all the time, but she's like, Daddy, can you play Black Panther, which is the...
The soundtrack?
Yeah. Well, not the... We can't play the whole soundtrack, yeah. But she knows the...
All the stars.
It's like her song right now. And so I got the clean version of that, and we can listen to it, and you should hear her, like, in the back of the car. She has no clue what the words are, but she knows the whole melody of the SZA part, right? And she sings the chorus. So, you know, I think it's a time and a place. I don't own a Future album, if that says anything, you know. And no shade to Future. Cause
yeah, it's just not for you.
It's not for me, right. Yeah.
You don't get down with Tekashi 69.
Listen, if your name is Little Anything or, like, I think of all of those, I call them, like, the anime rappers, because all those names sound like they should be anime movies or somebody in an anime movie. So I don't really rock with it, but if I'm out and I hear it and I ask, hey, what's that? You know,
you're like, all right,
it's cool. You know,
well, what I always think is interesting about those, the whole Lil phenomenon is like, it's only obvious that honestly, because when you look at the age of these people and you look at when Lil Wayne was at the, at his peak, that's what they're going for, like, as far as certain things. To me, I don't know.
Lil Wayne is their Michael Jackson.
Yes. Can you believe it? True. And it's true. And, okay, my brother's 20. God, he'll be 30.
Yeah.
This in 2019.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of gap between us, too, because so we still, when we were growing up, because we were born in 85, mm-hmm. we grew up still without, like, social media wasn't around when I was in high school. None of that. So it's like there's that gap to me, like that generational gap still between him and I, even though we're only like a few years apart.
Mm-hmm.
But he, like Lil Wayne was his idol. I'm telling you. And don't get me wrong. Like I liked Like Father Like Son.
Yeah,
Superman,
me too.
All the Way. I love that damn album. There's so much music that I did like. And, you know, that whole Cash Money. I was in high school during Cash Money. So, you know, there's stuff that I did like. But, like, the whole meteoric rise of Lil Wayne and his era, it definitely spawned, like, this whole freaking generation and era that we're in right now. Whether we wanted
to. I think, like, I remember being in, like, again, Backpack Ken, right? And then, like, people would come in the store. That's the interesting about working the record store is that you still got to sell all the other stuff, right? So people would come in the store and be like, yo, man, can you order me 400 Degrees or what? I'm like, man, I'll order it for you, but whatever.
You should be listening.
It's not playing in my store, bro, you know? But, like, people kept coming in like, yo, you really should listen to Lil Wayne. Like, I know you don't like this kind of music, but he has words or whatever. And then I remember, I think he had a mixtape called Dedication or one of those. And he was rapping over the Roots star. And I was like, oh, my God, this dude is really fresh. And so then I started listening to Lil Wayne, like, and, like, Carter 2, maybe, and those albums. And I was like, okay, I see what the appeal is with Lil Wayne. And, like, I started listening to a lot of Lil Wayne. And then he kind of lost me as it – I think we were talking about this on our show, too, is that, like, as the culture shifted – to a drug culture, that's when they started to lose me. Yeah, that's when they started to lose me. And then especially like when we look at the deaths of a lot of these young rappers.
Yeah.
Vex is from Pennsylvania, like I was from Pittsburgh. So he came up with Mac Miller. And so like that really hit him pretty hard when Mac Miller passed. And I was just starting to get into Mac Miller like within the last 4 years or so. But he was one of the people I'm like, okay, this kid is dope. And, like, because of drug culture, we end up, you know, losing a lot of this talent out here. So, and I, to be honest, because Lil Wayne is there, Michael Jackson, I kind of put that on Lil Wayne. It's not his responsibility to carry the torch.
He is the one that, honestly, in the mainstream.
Yep.
And I'm not going to lie, that influenced my brother, the whole lean and, like, glamorizing all that. And it actually... it goes deeper because it influences the top 40. Because if you notice the top 40 now, there's nothing fun and upbeat. Everything's low and like we want to just mellow out and freaking pop Zanny, whatever.
Yeah.
But it's just weird, like the domino effect of it all and how it's, you know.
It'll change though. Things, it's a cycle. Mm-hmm. So like, so 2 years from now, somebody will be wearing a shiny suit like Puffy. And it'll come, people will be dancing again, you know, so it goes around.
I know, so I'm excited to see what's in store. Yeah, my daughter's always 13.
Oh yeah, so you're getting there.
But my daughter's, she's all over the damn place, I don't know, and she's all into like her big obsession right now is Hamilton.
yeah
she's all obsessed with it, but like, so I'm, it's gonna be interesting to me to see what she's gonna get into, because in that, like you're saying, Erica, how she gets turned on to little things because her kids are like, oh, you know, I listen to this, and that's in her
ear. Yeah, like she came in when she played something and I was like, oh, that bangs, what is that? She was like, I think it was G-Eazy or somebody, and I'm like, okay.
G-Eazy.
But it's cool, like with us three, and that's kind of the vibe that we have, is that like she brings a lot of the Bay Area stuff and then like a lot of the newer stuff, and Vex is like, comes from hip hop, and like, because me, even though I come from soul and hip hop, that's my foundation, I play way more house, techno, and upbeat stuff. So they always joke, like, you're the old man with all the boots and pants and boots and pants and boots. And I'm like, hey, that's where I'm at right now. And who knows, it could be different next year. But.
Well, I just want to say thank you so much for taking time out of your day, because that's always the most valuable thing that people have is time.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. This was awesome. Yeah, we got to really get you guys to come in and play some records on the show sometime.
Yeah, that would be fun. Sure.
Yeah.
And thank you to Julian for staying open.
Yeah.
And so just really quick before we leave, and I forgot to say at the top, our Instagram is Just Keep Spinning Podcast. If you want to email us music that you want to feature on the show that you made or anything like that, you have beats, you want to say you love us, you hate us, anything, you can email us at justkeepspinningpodcast@gmail.com. And go ahead and give us your information.
Oh, yeah. You can find me pretty much, if you just search for My God Complex or DJ My God Complex, I'm on Twitter, although I don't use it. I'm on Instagram and Facebook Face, as my grandma says. but I primarily use Instagram, so at DJ My God Complex. And then certainly our group, again, Basement Tapes, at Basement Tapes PHX. Follow us and, you know, let's connect. I'm all about meeting people and like working together to build music culture here in the city. So,
yep.
And that's what we love. It. And you
that's what we're trying to do too.
That's the point of the podcast, actually, is just to build the community here. And it's funny because we actually do have listeners that are not even here in Phoenix. So it's interesting that our little, you know, corner in the universe is getting broadcasted out there to elsewhere. And really, you can also follow Basement Tapes on Mixcloud.
Yes, absolutely.
Basement Tapes PHX, right?
Yeah, Basement Tapes PHX, and then also DJ Vex, or DJ My God Complex on Mixcloud.
So. And then another thing, you can listen to their shows every Thursday?
Every Thursday night from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. And we're hoping, we're putting it in the air, that we can move and get a two-hour slot. So it may be changing, but for now, just like I said, the best way to follow us is to follow us on Instagram, and then we'll keep you updated as far as changes in the showtime.
Yes, and they have their residency for the time being at Crescent Ballroom every Saturday, right?
Yeah, Crescent Ballroom every Saturday, balcony party if it's nice weather. Otherwise, we'll be inside, but every Saturday, at least until the end of January, and then who knows, we play everywhere. Van Buren, Valley Bar, all over the place. And in 2019, we'll be bringing you some different events and some different spaces as well. So
it's exciting. You're very busy, Ken.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Plus, you have a family, and we know because we have our family
busy
together.
Busy life, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, shout out to the family for letting me do all this stuff. Yeah. I guess they don't care.
Shout out to Mrs. My God Complex.
Yeah, Mrs. My God Complex. She's like, just go do it. You'll be fine.
Just get out of the way.
Yeah.
Like we said, thank you so much. We really do appreciate everybody who listens. Anybody who, if you can, please subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes.
All of the stuff.
Spotify. Anywhere you can listen to a podcast, we're pretty much on there.
Or and for other people who are listening on stuff we don't even know because it doesn't come up in our...
Yeah, it says other apps.
Other apps. So other apps and people. Thanks, over in Ireland apps. And in Dublin. Shout out to you guys for listening.
Everybody in Dublin, everybody anywhere.
All over, yeah. I can't remember right now, but there's a whole bunch of people all over.
Yeah.
We see you.
We still got congestion from the holiday in the brain, so but thank you so much, Ken. Like we said, we really do truly appreciate it.
Thank you guys
and we appreciate too that even though you're not from here that you're contributing, because that's really what matters.
Absolutely.
And thank you very much. Don't stop digging and just keep spinning.
Thanks guys.